Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Rome Electric has been recognised by the Financial Times as Africa's fastest growing mobility company. The firm is a technology-led pioneer in designing and producing electric motorcycles and buses tailored for emerging markets. Although not publicly listed, Rome has recently opened a fundraising round on Crowdcube. Welcome to this UK Investor Magazine podcast. I'm Jeremy Naylor. Joining us today is Rome's Chief Executive, Philip Lovstrom. Philip, great to have you on the pod today. Before we get into this fundraising round, let's look at what Rome is doing, as it's a fascinating story. What core problem are you addressing in African transportation?
Fantastic to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I mean, there's so many different parts to what we do that are all exciting, but the fundamental problem that we're trying to solve is that the need for transport across Africa is growing rapidly, and it's only going to keep on increasing over the coming decades, really. And we want to make sure that there are properly designed, properly built mobility solutions and electric vehicles for the African market.
That's such a great encapsulation of what you're doing. So how do you see the African EV market evolving over the next 5 to 10 years? We hear a lot about progress and government intervention and encouragement here in the West, but what's happening in Africa?
So, I mean, those are two different parts there, right? When it comes to government intervention, I think we're seeing a lot of governments and policy incentives pushing really hard for this due to not having the same type of well-filled liquidity buffers as a lot of other countries in the world. The incentives exist in terms of, you know, concessions on manufacturing license and tax reductions on electric vehicles. So not direct subsidies, but just really incentivizing the sector for a couple of reasons. One, it allows for local manufacturing to happen to a greater extent, which is something that we are very passionate about, just giving lots of parts of Africa a possibility to get on that automotive journey that has built so much of Europe over the years. As you know, I'm from Sweden. Volvo was a huge part of the area where I grew up and created so many jobs, right? And that's a similar thing that we want to see here. The other thing is that a lot of African nations are struggling with the huge amount of trade deficit when it comes to buying billions of dollars of fuel every single year, whereas electricity for electric mobility can be manufactured locally. In Kenya, where we operate today, is specifically about 95% renewables, right? All domestically produced. So that's quite exciting to why governments like it and what's happening now. I think how it will evolve and develop over the coming years, I think is quite clear. It's going to take a similar journey to both Europe and to China, where it will go from, you know, a niche early adopter type product and consumer offering to just a very obvious choice, because the huge benefit with electric vehicles, it's not that it's green. That's great for everyone else. That's great for the world. But the huge benefit is that you save money. You save on your operating costs. You can reduce your spend by about 80% from switching from petrol to electric. Right. And that's what drives a huge market. So, I mean, currently we're at about 7% of new sales of motorcycles in Kenya are electric, and we see that increasing to, you know, over the coming 5 years, increasing to double digit percentage of new sales, and it will grow quite quickly. And that follows general consumer patterns around Kenya and many places in East Africa. You have a very small sliver of early adopters, and you have a huge early majority that just comes in and dominates the demand for the market.
So where does Rome fit into that trajectory then? How much of a market slice have you got? What are you aiming for?
So today we are about 40% of all the deployed vehicles in Kenya when it comes to electric, and we are always increasing that. So what we have done is create products that has the right product market fit, right? So create products that we have the IP and ownership of those products. And if we speak to motorcycles specifically, we went around the world and said, surely there must be a motorcycle that fits this use case. Turns out there isn't. Turns out that we needed to go back to the drawing board and design a lot of it ourselves. And we did that back in 2020, then spent about 2.5 years in product development to say, okay, we think that this product is what the market needs. Ran a lot of pilots during that period, just collecting data, understanding how people drive. And then we started manufacturing it here in Nairobi. We have, you know, component inputs from China, from India, and from Kenya with about 30% each. Just bring all those things together and make sure that we manufacture it here. So what we have done is create a product that fits the use case, that has the right product market fit for the very, very heavy commercial use case that exists in Kenya, where it's not a commuter motorcycle, it's not a, you know, something that someone used for leisure riding, although it is a very, very fun motorcycle to ride. It is primarily a workhorse. It needs to be able to drive at least 120 kilometers on a daily basis, including the charging time for it. It needs to be able to carry 200 kilos of load up a hill. It needs to be able to do so many things that is such a heavy use case. It's a type of performance that we haven't been able to see in motorcycles from other parts of the world. And hitting that trifecta of performance, quality and reliability, and affordability has really been the triangle that we've been targeting over the past couple of years in development and as we go more and more into the manufacturing aspirations of the business.
You mentioned a lot about motorcycles. I know if you look on your website, you also include electric buses, but my understanding is that's quite a nascent part of the business, quite an early stage. Is that right? Are you really focused here on the motorcycle aspect of mobility?
Today, we offer both products and have done work on both products. The buses are in a slightly earlier, you know, commercial piloting stage. So we're not spending a lot of time on the commercialization of it because we are, you know, very conscious that it takes a lot of resources to properly deploy a product. And I think that's how you should view our whole company and our whole background, that we've taken the long route to do a lot of things because we think that that builds for a larger scale as we pick up. So today, we are incredibly focused on scale. Scaling the production and the efficiency of the production on the motorcycles whilst we collect data and information on the bus usage. And it's slightly different in terms of how deep we've gone into deployment because we fundamentally believe that the technology to combat climate change exists. It just needs to be packaged in the right product with the right business model. So that's what we've spent time on for both buses and motorcycles. When it comes to the motorcycles, we had to design something completely from ground up, leveraging both existing component selections, but putting them into together in a product that meets a different use case. When it comes to buses, there is plenty of bus platforms, especially from a number of Asian countries that, you know, fill a lot of the needs. So what we do is just act as a facilitator of that. Work very closely with our suppliers to bring the bus skateboard platform here. And then we work with local bus manufacturers to build the body around that. And we think that's the most scalable way to do buses in the longer term, because there is very little value to owning that IP in the short, medium, and long term. So I think over the coming year, as we go through the different rounds of fundraising, we will absolutely focus on bringing profitability at scale for the company and break even points for the company, as well as scaling motorcycles as far as we can reach, and then making sure that we tackle the bus side. And the reason we have both of these segments is this is really how Africa moves. If you look at the GDP levels across Kenya, East Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa, if you look at the fast pace of, you know, demographic development, most countries are growing with about 7% per year. And in urban situations, we have in urban environments, we're growing with 10% per year. So urbanization is much faster than population growth, which just leads to this dynamic where you're going to put a lot of people in a very tight space, which means that you're going to need the most efficient way to transport those people. That's going to be buses, and that's going to be two-wheelers. And that's why we're focused on those products.
Yeah, I think in the context of what we're talking about this morning, the fact that you've got your major focus on the motorcycle business is interesting. Who are your primary customer segments? I see on the website there's a lot of boda-boda driver type vehicles, but there's presumably fleet operators as well. How far deep do you go into public transit?
So our motorcycle is designed for the Boda Boda user. And the Boda Boda user is someone who is an integral part of the local ecosystem of transport. Our end users do everything from transporting people, providing end-of-mile logistics services. Pretty much anything that you order will be delivered on the motorcycle. So a huge part of the logistics and transport network around Africa and around Sub-Saharan Africa. There's about 25 million motorcycles in Sub-Saharan Africa today, and it's growing with about 4 million motorcycles per year, all of it being used in the end for this type of use case. End of mile logistics, individual taxi transport, and just pretty much anything that you can imagine will be transported on a motorcycle at some point. Now, the way that gets out into the market is about 80% of all motorcycles, at least in the Kenyan market, are asset financed. Right, because access to capital is one of the trickier things in this part of the world. So asset financing companies and microfinancing institutes are a huge part of the sort of demand surge and the supplying the demand with motorcycles, where you as a rider show up, you pay a deposit, and then you pay a daily fee of a few dollars per day for between 12 to 24 months, depending on, you know, what terms you sign up on, how quickly you want to pay it off, and et cetera. And then that motorcycle is yours. you will probably use it for another 3 to 4 or 5 years before the end of the lifetime. What the remaining about 20% of the market are fleet operators. It is actors like everything from Uber to DHL to G4S and all of these different actors that you can imagine that all run slightly different business models, but the main core of their operation is that they need access to motorcycles and they have people employed to do that. So we've created a product and a business model that lends itself very well to the Boda driver, to the fleet manager, to the asset financer, and making sure that we have both the hardware to, you know, meet that performance requirement, as well as the software to meet the other sides of that requirement, being able to track your asset, being able to do fleet planning, etc.
So what do you see as the key adoption barriers for EVs in Africa? I guess you've got a whole long list of them. Initially, I'm thinking charging, financing, battery swapping. What do you see as the headwinds?
I mean, that's interesting. I get that question quite often on, you know, what are your top challenges? And I keep telling to myself, I should write these down because I don't see them as challenges. I just see them as part of the to-do list, right? And that might be a very entrepreneurial way of viewing it. But if I'm looking at, you know, what we need to sort, a lot of the issues that you mentioned, we've sort of fundamentally designed to avoid from start. So when it comes to the charging infrastructure, there's two sides. One, the fundamental principle when Rome sells a motorcycle is that we sell you a motorcycle with a battery, two helmets, two vests, and a charger, which means that you can plug it into any normal socket and charge it there. That's obviously a bit slower, but you can charge it at home and you can charge wherever. So with the amount of just like plug-in points that you have from a normal socket, charging infrastructure as a baseline foundation to create the feasibility of electric mobility around this area, I perceive that as to be solved. Now you get into the next step of it, which is how do we make it more convenient? And that's where Roma, we have launched a number of battery charging stations, and we also do battery rentals, right? So we have customers, the typical use case is that someone will charge at home overnight. They will do business in town during the day, and then, you know, after the morning rush, they will come and drop their battery off with us to charge. And if they need to continue at that moment, they can rent a battery from us and continue their driving. But the main principle is that battery that they left to charge, that will always be theirs. So if we've solved the charging equation there, and Rome in itself, we are earning a good and healthy margin on the charging services that we provide, which I quite appreciate that we are not locking customers into using our charging stations. They only come to us if we provide a good service. I think that it gives agency to the driver and it shows integrity. And I like that. We have to provide a good service. And this should be compared to most of electric vehicle deployments around, especially two-wheelers around sub-Saharan Africa, is based on swapping. And that doesn't give the consumer an end choice of where to charge, where to, you know, reduce cost or choose to spend a little bit extra to rent a battery and et cetera, because you have to go to these swapping stations. So that's quite a key point to us. When it comes to headwinds further than that, a lot of it will be based on financing. As we scale and grow bigger and bigger and bigger, I don't think that we have a fundamental gap in, you know, demand side, how the business model works, how the financing works. So it is more about making sure that we have enough funds to increase our deployment, to have enough working capital in place to make it more and more affordable with higher and higher volumes, as well as deploying higher and higher volumes. I think that's very much how we view it. Rome will grow and become a huge company, but we want to make sure that we grow and become a huge company that supplies all of sub-Saharan Africa with all of the products that they need. And I think the gap between now and then is going to be funding.
Okay, so I'll pick up more on the funding when we talk about the Crowdcube decision in just a moment, but I want to find out a little bit more about to what degree your business model relies on expansion against retention. It's clear to me that you've got quite a lot of sticky business going on here. And obviously, as you say, if you provide a good service, people are going to come back. So you want to do that, obviously. Clearly, there's a potentially massive market out there for you. How do you judge retention versus expansion?
Today, all of the volume that we are pushing out of the factory is pretty much going to Nairobi only because the demand here is big. So we earn our revenue through the biggest chunk of our revenue through selling the motorcycle. And then we earn our biggest chunk on the lifetime value of the motorcycle through the charging and the after sales, et cetera. We want to make sure that we get to company level break even, and that's at about 800 motorcycles per month. We're right now doing between 300 to 400, so we're not too far away, but that's just one step. We want to make sure that we hit that before we start expanding. So if you look at it, a lot of the lifetime margins that we will earn will come throughout the lifespan of the vehicle, which means that we want to provide good services for customers to keep on coming back to us. We want to make sure that it's super simple for you to operate a Roam motorcycle and Roam product in general. Our business model is not dependent on us expanding into other countries. That we want to do to make sure that we can offer our products to more people and make sure that we grow our top line and revenue over time.
So, what's the projected payback then for anybody picking up a Roam motorcycle? What's the period that customers have to look at compared to what they would have to pay if they were on an internal combustion engine? What are the advantages and the projected payback?
So that's one of the beautiful things with the asset financing companies, because the cost difference between our motorcycle and a petrol motorcycle is $500. So $2,000 versus $1,500 for the petrol one. Now, the capital expenditure is slightly higher, as is normal with electric vehicles, but it is getting quite close to price parity. Now, for someone who buys it on asset financing, the financing portion of your daily cost is slightly higher, but the operating expenditure of your daily cost, so the fuel versus electricity, is substantially lower. So from day one, you save 35% of your daily costs from buying our motorcycle. After you finance it, you save about 80%. Those are conservative numbers. We're continuously seeing drivers that has a higher savings than that. So yeah, that's through the asset financers where the majority of our offtake goes through. If you cash buy it, it is, within a couple of months that the difference shows itself.
Okay, let's talk about the funding round, which is the main reason to talk to you today. Well, why have you gone down the Crowdcube route?
It's a very good question. I mean, we are quite excited about it because throughout the years, we've raised money through different fundraisers that we've done. We started out the first 3 years of the company being completely revenue funded because there was really not a lot of capital available for electric mobility in Africa at all. We were viewed as quite insane at that moment in time. And maybe we were, but we have come quite far since then. Throughout the different funding rounds that we've done, we've always had a number of people who said, "Oh, I wish I could participate and invest in the company." And with bigger institutional rounds, it's hard to take on smaller ticket sizes. So we said, "You know what? This fundraise that we're doing now, the larger Series B and the institutional round, this is probably going to be our last fundraise for quite some time, because after this, we will hit profitability and we will be in a position where we will not as actively raise money anymore." So we said, why not take this opportunity, engage with Crowdcube, who we have a good relationship with, and make sure that we open up our investment round to a bigger cohort of a community and make sure that people can participate in this journey. We're very open. We always love to partner with good, smart people. We think that that's the way to really achieve, long-term scale. So that's the background to the decision. We said, listen, this is going to be a good time for retail investors of this type to get in on the ground, and this is going to be a good timing of the company journey to open up for this bigger community. So we're quite excited about it.
So, what's the purpose and scope of this fundraise?
It's a good question. What we are aiming to do now at this point is to raise quite a substantial round to make sure that we get to profitability. And that institutional fundraise that we're expecting to close within the coming 6 months is where we have opened up a sliver for the Crowdcube investments. And this will really get us to a point where we can accelerate output and production, which gets us to a point of break even and profitability, which allows us to scale rapidly across Kenya, across East Africa, and across the rest of Sub-Saharan Africa. Because the way we view this is that we are at an early stage of what will be the very natural evolution and a big revolution on the African transport market across the continent. We are obviously very excited about both closing out this fundraise from an institutional perspective, as well as offering up to a wider community through Crowdcube, and then by extension, having all of this lead to just the possibility of having such a tremendous impact across the continent and the market.
So how do you see shareholder return for those wanting to buy into this fundraising through Crowdcube? What are you telling shareholders?
Today, we're saying, listen, this is going to be an immensely valuable company who's going to have a huge impact on Africa, on the world, while still maintaining healthy profits and being good for the planet. So when it comes to how we view our company, it is really people, planet, profit. The first company that I've seen throughout my whole career where you have an opportunity to actually impact all of those three things. It has to be hugely profitable to make sense as a business. It has to make sense for people and the end users with the money they're saving and the impact we have on their livelihoods, where they can go from, let's say, 35% and by extension, 80% savings they have every day. This is for people who are making a few dollars per day. So doubling their daily income is massive. And then obviously these are electric motorcycles that has a huge impact on air quality and as well as climate change. And we need to make sure that we scale this as quickly as possible. So the way we look at the business is, listen, this is going to be great for people. It's going to be great for planet, but it's also going to be great for profits. And we need to make sure that we grow this. So this opportunity now, when it comes to investor returns, this opportunity is a possibility to get in at an earlier stage of the company. We've already been operating for 8 years. This is the moment to get in to make sure that you both increase your equity value. And by the point of an exit, hopefully that has increased substantially, and all whilst doing something that is good for the world and good for people.
One other good metric, I suppose, is how efficiently you've used past funding rounds, and to tell us what milestones were achieved there to give us a better idea as to how you implement the use of this money you're raising.
We have in total over the past 6 years raised a total of $30 million. A lot of it put into the development and R&D of the motorcycle and the bus, as well as, you know, setting up production and increasing that. So at this point, we feel like, okay, we have the product in the bag, we have the manufacturing in the bag, and we need to scale up production and make sure that we do that in a you know, very efficient way. If you do a comparison, we've gotten to a point of you know, commercialized product, driving for revenue, when other international OEMs, startups within the electric sphere were at the same stage. We can look at Tesla, for example, when they were at the same stage as us when it comes to, you know, product maturity, product market fit, and sort of ready to scale up the production, they had raised a total of $750 million. We've done a lot of what we've done very capital efficient on a total of $30 million.
What are the biggest execution risks then over the next 24 months? And in that period, while you get to profitability, do you intend to come to the market for a full listing?
Let me answer those questions in reverse order. Today, it's too early to say that we're going to go for a full listing. It usually takes a bit longer for African-focused companies. So if we do one, when we do one, will depend on a lot of market dynamics. It will definitely not happen within 24 months, but it will be a judgment that we do to make sure, a later stage, to make sure that we can give returns to investors. On the coming 24 months, we have put a lot of effort in putting our team together to be able to execute. We have put a lot of effort into our product to make sure that that has the right product market fit, is sustainable from both a end user perspective as well as profitability perspective for us. You know, doing all the early stage production of warranties and making sure that all of those things are just taken care of. And a lot of the execution that we are focused on and the milestones that we want to see happen over the coming 24 months is really one, hitting profitability a Kenya-only basis. So deploying products in here, getting up to a stage of, you know, between 800 to 1,000 motorcycles, that's where we will hit profitability. But increasing the production to about 1,600 motorcycles per month out of our current facility. We're then looking at engaging and entering other markets to make sure that we establish an operational footprint in those spaces and in those areas. I think from a European perspective, it's easy to say that if you have a good product, you should go to more markets. But the way both we like to do things and the best way to do things around these parts of Africa is to make sure that we come in with a good and operational footprint to make sure that we provide service to end users, to make sure that we can control the product experience, because that is what builds loyalty and brand in the long term. And that's really what we want to make sure. We're not interested in making a quick buck. We're interested in building a company that survives for the long term, building a company that has a brand that is appreciated for the quality and robustness and affordability it provides in its product. So over the coming 24 months, it will be a lot about driving for volumes and distribution around Kenya, and then focusing on the distribution channels in other parts of Africa.
Philip, it's been a pleasure. Thanks indeed for joining us. Fascinating story there for Rome Electric. Good to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's Philip Lovestrom, Chief Executive of Rome Electric, a company which is now on Crowdcube. You can find out more about this on Rome Electric's website.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.